From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. Indeed, this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're pleased to welcome in Miriam San Martino, who is the Director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns here at the Diocese of Sacramento. Miriam, good day to you.
Good day to you, Bob.
Good to have you with us. Tell us about this wonderful letter from the Bishop, and talking about Rogation Days, May 23rd, 24th, and 25th. That may be a new word for some people, rogation.
I bet it is. It is an older liturgical celebration, but it is very important to remember that it's a moment and a couple of days where we can celebrate and really ask and pray for God's mercy in bringing more rain, helping us with this drought, but at the same time giving thanks for the many blessings of crops and ensuring that, you know, our communities can receive the fruit of our earth. And we can continue to reflect on why it's so important to continue to care for our common home here in the diocese.
Yes, and boy, there's talk about, there's a lot of emphasis on agriculture, and there's probably nowhere in the world where ag is more important. We tend to be the breadbasket for the whole world here in the Sacramento Valley.
Yeah. And, you know, it really, we know that so many people's lives depend on agriculture, right? Whether you own the land, whether you harvest, you are working the field, you work in the supermarket, you sell the produce. And those of us who have to buy it as well, right? We all live from the earth and from the crops and everything that happens. So it's really important for us to be really connected to what happens climate-wise, what happens to the farmlands, and then also the mountainside.
Sure.
You know, so it's such an important time, again, to unite as Catholics living here in the Sacramento Valley, thinking about everyone, and hopefully, you know, coming out of this next summer season with healthy crops, with no wildfires, hopefully, and hopefully no impact from the drought.
Yeah, and the drought, of course, you talk about it's all up and down the coast, much more pronounced in California, of course, but places in southern Oregon are suffering from drought as well, and, you know, the constant war, if you will, between farmers and salmon, and you know, there's those kinds of issues, and I guess war is the wrong word, but that tension between ag and urban as well over water, which has played out in throughout California's history for sure, you hear about it a lot now, the Colorado River Basin and all of the, not just California, but Arizona and Nevada, and even obviously going into Mexico, the same problems.
Yeah, you know, and it really impacts, you know, even things that maybe we don't think are related to the drought or to wildfires. You know, when you think of the unhoused, those who are living in the streets, as the days get warmer, if there is a drought, you know, or, I mean, we're experiencing a drought right now, what's the availability to water? What's the availability to shade? You know, those are really big impacts to how we live our everyday. And then you're looking at the neighborhoods, really don't have much of a tree canopy. They experience a higher temperature during the summer months than the neighborhoods that maybe do have a tree canopy. So there's a lot of impact to each and every one of us. Sometimes we don't think about, right, how the agriculture, how the climate is all related to how we live our everyday.
Yeah, I was reading a study out of Tucson, and you know, about 40 miles north of very southern Arizona, and they talked exactly about that, about the difference in canopies, the difference in green space from one part of the city to the other. And no surprise that in the poorer parts of the city, it was up to 10 degrees warmer in the summer than it was in the, you know, more well-off parts of the city.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, that creates a huge impact for children, for elderly who don't, may not have access to air conditioning. The cities usually respond, right, with heat centers.
Cooling centers, heat centers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we definitely need prayers and help here to minimize those over 100-degree days in the Sacramento.
So talk a little bit about Rogation Days, what you know about this ancient rite, and also what our, you know, calling is to do during these the three designated days, the observance of Rogation Days, May 23, 24, and 25, just right around the corner.
Yeah, one of the things that used to happen before, and it can still happen today, and we invite communities and parishes to consider, is to go out to a farm and, you know, pray and bless the land, pray for rain and everything that's needed to have healthy crops, and to really, you know, meet the farmers, the farming families who have been there for generations, many of them, and the those who work in the fields, so that, you know, they have a successful season, that they are safe from the heat, and that they are given what we need, right, rain, good soil, in order to have a good harvest. That's one thing that used to happen, you know, procession, it was a beautiful ceremony, really connecting, right, the parish community to those who work the land. And we also ask for, again, prayers. Prayers are very important. In the letter, we did include a celebration of St. Isidore, who would go to Mass every day before going out and working the fields. And just reflecting on, you know, on our day-to-day, what do we do to help our brothers and sisters who are suffering because of the ever, you know, the changes that we see in climate, brothers and sisters who have already suffered from wildfires, and we hope and pray that doesn't happen again this year, but really reflect on standing in solidarity with our brothers and sisters and thinking about, you know, am I using reusable cups? Water, am I using water bottles, and maybe I can use something from home? What can I do around my home to be more drought resistant, right? So if you're able to consider more drought resistant landscaping, maybe getting to know what's going on in your neighborhood, right? We do, especially in Sacramento, we have such different or diversity in tree canopy, in air quality, just getting more awareness of what's going on and how that's impacting families.
Yeah, St. Isidore the Farmer. Of course, we have St. Isidore Parish up in Yuba City, right in the heart of of farmland. A lot of orchards up there, and a lot of rice as well. And but the you know what, St. Isidore going to Mass every day before going out of the fields reminds me of a famous Californian, Cesar Chavez, was also a daily Mass attendee, and made no secret of his, you know, love for the faith.
Yeah, it's just a reminder. It's a really a good time to reflect on, you know, the sacraments that we celebrate, how it's connected to our care for earth. And it's really through relationships, right, that we're considering in our reflection. It's our relationship with God. It's our relationship with each other. And then our relationship with creation. And to really think that those three relationships are very important and they're connected. And so if we feel disconnected from creation, then we cannot be fully connected to God or each other. So it's, you know, just a reminder, reflect and really think about those relationships.
The as you note in your letter, Rogation Days were customarily held during the 3 days preceding the Feast of the Ascension of the Lord, you know, 40 days after Easter, which when I was growing up, we called Ascension Thursday, and now we celebrate it on Sunday. Yes. The farmers would often have their fields blessed for a bountiful harvest. The Ascension, of course, is now observed on Sunday. With Catholic Charities and Social Concerns, these are things that the environment directly affects the work that you folks do.
Absolutely.
I look at the wildfires and the the drought and how it affects crops, how not just how it affects crops, how it affects people, how it affects the poor. It's all interconnected, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely a reminder, right, that none of us are alone, and we definitely do need each other in order to live. And so thinking about, again, how everybody else's lives are impacted, but how you can make an improvement, small improvements day to day can really make a big difference. We have several workshops going on in Sacramento. We had one, I think, last weekend, or it's coming up this weekend, you know, talking about Laudato Si, the creation for a common care for a common home. And so thinking about how Pope Francis is reminding us that we are all interconnected. There is an element of responsibility, right, that God has entrusted on us to care for his creation, for Earth, and that everything that we do really impacts the long-term of sustainability, the long-term of how well we are able to live on this planet. And one of the beautiful things is that we're reminded how much of that responsibility is to care. It's to care not for only ourselves, but for the children, for our elderly, and we really do need a safe home where we can all thrive and really develop our skills, right, that God has given us.
So what do you take from Laudato Si?
What do I take from Laudato Si?
Yeah. What does it mean to you?
To me, it means that there has to be an understanding within us that in order to fully live or just feel God's love, it's not just in how we treat each other, but it is how responsible and caring we are for each other. And the way we care for one another is by being responsible ecologically, you know, looking at the aspects of environmental justice. What are those systems that we have in place right now that continue to harm the environment, continue to, for, you know, like the redlining of districts? Why is it that there's a low tree canopy where are the most poorest of us live?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Why is it that we have the highest pollution, right, where those who are most vulnerable are exposed? But then also climate justice, right? We want to talk about or think about what can we do, what are we doing as a human race to think about the long-term health of our planet. We are supposed to care for it, and it's really, it's a pro-life issue in that sense,
mm-hmm.
right? The more we disregard the importance of caring for our oceans and our land, then the more that we're disregarding the importance of how much life depends on those resources. So for me, it just kind of connects everything, right? It reminds me, right, that we're not alone, and that we really do need each other to be able to continue and care for each other like we've been asked to do.
Among the things that we're to pray for, pray for rain, prayers for a bountiful harvest, prayers for contrition, and the acknowledgement of our role as stewards of the creation God has entrusted to us, prayers for farmers and all those who labor in the fields, prayers for the protection of human life, especially the unborn and the frail elderly. Just so much to talk about and think about. One other thing, if you've got a minute before you go, want to talk a little bit about Know Your Rights as a Tenant, which is going to come up on June the 11th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Our Lady, the National Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe, Saturday, June the 11th. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Yeah, we're going to have experts come and join us for this event. We really want tenants to understand what they can do now to prevent eviction, right? One of the things we want to focus on is preventing evictions. Prevention of homelessness is very important, and there are many resources available, but it's very confusing, right? We had a lot of rental assistance programs out there. Sometimes the cities or the counties have different eviction moratoriums or different eviction ordinances. Sometimes the paperwork that a tenant may receive to start the unlawful detainer or the eviction process can be very confusing. And so we want to provide clear and trustworthy information for anybody who may be facing the situation or may have concerns that the situation of eviction might come up soon as you know, rental assistance programs start to close out. It's very important to respond to these types of legal proceedings because the last thing we want to see is a family losing their home, you know, because they didn't have the resources available, didn't understand the process. And so we want to walk with our brothers and sisters who are facing this terrible situation and hopefully connect them to those resources that will keep them housed.
Again, it's the National Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is at 711 T Street here in Sacramento, June 11th, Saturday, 6 to 8 p.m. Miriam, I know you were involved in a rental assistance program in Solano County. How did that, is that winding down, and how did that all work out?
Yeah, so we ended up doing two rounds of rental assistance program in response to the pandemic, and in total, I believe it was about almost $12 million that was distributed to tenants, and so we helped over, let's see now, almost over 1,800 households avoid eviction during the pandemic. It was a huge endeavor, but, you know, it wasn't just Catholic Charities. It really was a partnership between Catholic Charities, St. Vincent de Paul, and our parishes in Solano, where we had over 50 volunteers helping us connect with those truly in need. It was really work being done in our parishes, in the streets, so that we can connect to those who, you know, may not be comfortable going to big offices or not sure. know where to go for rental assistance. So it was a successful program. We are winding it down at Catholic Charities Yolo Solano, but we continue to provide resources and information to those who still need it.
So did the money actually pay for rent for people for a while?
Yeah. The first round of rental assistance, eligible households received $4,000, up to $4,000 to help pay for rent. And the second round, we paid up to 12 months
of
rent. Yeah, for eligible households. And the money went directly to the landlords. And so not only were we getting to know tenants who were, you know, facing this difficult moment, but we were also able to get to know landlords who, you know, we're really in a vulnerable position, but we're committed to keeping families housed. You know, a lot of times tenants and landlords knew each other for years, and they were just both facing this difficult moment. So it was really beautiful to see how this funding kept people housed, but also supported landlords and local property owners who maybe didn't have the resources to, you know, keep some of the properties without this help.
That's great when you can get landlords and tenants on the same side. They're not, as you say, they're not natural enemies. It's just there can be tension for sure, but frequently landlords and tenants, they've known each other for a long time and have a great relationship.
Yeah, and you know, the pandemic put all of us in a really difficult situation, but I think that's, again, part of the reason we do what we do. You know, we don't judge folks, really. If you need help, we're here to help. And we see both sides and try to understand and be very compassionate and really try to make the best for everybody in the situation.
Very good. Well, Miriam, thanks. Thanks for all the great work you do here. And I know a lot of people are counting on you. And thanks especially for taking some time with us today. And we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Bob.
Thanks, Miriam. Take care. That's Miriam San Martino, who is the executive director of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns for the entire Diocese of Sacramento. And again, the Rogation Days coming up May 23, 24, and 25, as the bishop's letter said, and the Office of Catholic Charities and Social Concerns will provide information as an aid to the observance of Rogation Days, imploring God's mercy for more rain to bring an end to the drought in California, to bless the precious earth that nourishes us, and protect our forests and mountain communities during the coming months from the risk of wildfires. Join us in prayer and charity with many brothers and sisters facing the challenges of the prevailing ecological crisis. And you can look and find more about this at the scd.org, the Sacramento Catholic Diocese website. We'll take a quick break, back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
This is James McCormick, President and CEO of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. You're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, James. Thanks for that wonderful, wonderful introduction. Appreciate all that you and the Choral Society does here in the Diocese of in the greater Sacramento area. Well, we're pleased to welcome in Moises De Leon here from the Diocese of Sacramento. Moises, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob. How about you?
Very good. Very good. We're moving on toward summer, and you don't get to take a vacation, man. You just got work to do.
Yeah, it's one of the busiest times for my office.
It's really true, isn't it? Yeah. Tell us, you got, Moises is the Associate Director for Family and Respect Life Ministry here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Tell us what you got going on.
So one of the major events that we have over the summer is the National Family Planning Annual Gathering.
Yes.
And this is focused and targeting basically the NFP instructors, anyone involved in the marriage prep process for couples. So it could be deacons, it could be the team itself. If priests are involved, they're invited. It's also an invitation to any family who's interested to learn a little bit more about the NFP initiative that we have here in the diocese. So But this year it's a little bit unique. We're bringing two guest speakers to really talk about what is NFP and how to really actually promote it within the parishes. So we're having Christina Venezuela from the Archdiocese of Boston come in and really talk about exactly how can we better connect with each other. Sometimes NFP is seen as its own ministry. Many times we don't even talk about what NFP is. But one of her great initiatives that she's done in her diocese is promote NFP ambassadors. So you don't even have to be an instructor. And that's one of the initiatives we're trying to push here in the diocese is really have people to for them to understand what NFP is. And if questions come up, at least in the parish level, there's going to be someone who's going to know what NFP is and referring them to local resources or even NFP instructors within the area.
So when does this all take place?
This one's this event's going to take place on Saturday, July 16th, and it's going to be roughly around 9:30. We're trying to have people really get there on time, so registration will open at 9:30. The main event or program will start at 10 a.m. We're asking everyone to RSVP because we have limited supplies. Christina is providing NFP and like a workbook to really tackle these obstacles that we face in our local parishes and everything. So it's a limited supply. There is a $10 for the handbook. We're trying to subsidize the cost as much as we can. So we're really asking people to register. Like I said, families are welcome. So if children want to be present, you can. There's no charge for anyone. It's just for the materials that will be obtained at the event.
Very good. And there's also an opportunity at some point for people that want to become a fertility care practitioner.
Yes. So we're still promoting trainings. We're trying to bring a local training on the accredited method here locally. Usually it's held in Fresno, but our previous coordinator, Andrea, was able to talk to one of the teachers to really bring that training closer to us. So we're hosting that later in the fall.
Okay.
I think it's October, November of this year. So if anyone's interested, just please give a call or leave me a message in my office, and we'll add you to the list.
It's a 13-month course of study incorporating two classroom instruction phases and remote supervised teaching. Creighton is a medically standardized modification of the Billings method, providing an allied health profession and case management. And also there are possible scholarships for this because there is a cost to it, of course.
And one of the things that we're trying to promote also with the NFP is the NACPRO technology. In case couples are having trouble with infertility, part of this the annual gathering is to have that conversation of what NACPRO technology is and how it's more ethical compared to the IVF methods out there, and it's less costly. So if anyone's interested in the technology, we're trying to bring a doctor later this year, but we're going to have some of those conversations and information at the gathering as well.
Yeah, there's more and more evidence that this can be really helpful to couples that are having trouble having a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where they're just learning more things every day. So that's good. What else do you have going on?
Well, our following gathering would be the Gaber Project gathering. We do it every year, so this is our second year in the run. We're bringing in the coordinator from the Archdiocese of San Francisco, Maria Martinez.
Mm-hmm.
And she's going to give us more of the practical approach she's done, how she's been able to make the ministry change over her time at San Francisco from not just only receiving mothers in need and trying to provide the basic direct service, but making it more of a ministry as well in the process. So she provided a great option of providing a holistic approach, what the Gaber Project can be, moving forward and as a diocesan ministry. So we're going to try to get as many of the parishes who currently have a GABLE project, which should be roughly around 38 parishes so far, to join us. We're asking them to RSVP just to make sure we have enough materials and food is provided, so the event's free. It's going to be hybrid, so for those who can't attend in person, they can do it online. We just need them to register in the process as well. That one's going to be held in Saturday, August 6th, from 9 to 2:30 in the afternoon.
Very good. Very good. And then you get to put your feet up?
Yes. At least for a couple of weeks. After that, I have another event in 2-3 weeks from that. But at least there's a break there.
Well, September gets to be a very busy month. I don't know which parts of it you're involved in, but with ministry days at the end of the month and, of course, On Fire at Six Flags in September. Bishop Gallegos Maternity Home Annual Dinner is September the 11th, a Sunday. People, if you've never been to that, it's a great event to go to for people who really care about helping people who are pregnant and in need. And September, a very busy month.
It is, Bob.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know most of the families are returning back home and their kids are going to school. So it becomes a little bit hectic, I know, around the house. So we try to have most of our events at least in the summer in order to provide that space for families not to feel too chaotic.
Yep. Yeah, very good. Well, it's an interesting time to be on this earth, and the Lord's still with us. So it's our duty and our joy, really, to help spread the good word in a million different ways. You know, I look at all the different ministries there are in this vast diocese of Sacramento, and it's mind-boggling how many different things are going on, all leading everyone to the truth of Jesus Christ.
Oh, yes, that's true, Bob.
Well, Moises, anything I didn't ask you about you'd like to add?
I mean, I just want to add in if any other parish that isn't involved in the GABLE project is interested in being part of the ministry, they can reach out to my office. It doesn't take too much. There's only like 3 or 4 requirements. One of them is obviously having the pastor's approval. Second of all is having a sign promoting the GABLE project at your parish and then forming a small ministry or a committee. So anyone who's interested in expanding the GABLE project ministry, and especially now and during our times where we need to provide options for our moms in need, anyone who's interested, just call my office, which is 916-733-0133.
Very good. I know you've explained this before, but we also get new listeners every day. Explain just a little bit about the GABLE project and the diocese taking it over from a strictly, I guess, volunteer basis.
Yes. So last year, the diocese took over the GABLE project from being a nonprofit here locally to a diocesan ministry. So those parishes that are currently involved, what they do as part of the ministry is provide support to mothers in need, any referrals when it comes to local agencies in case they need any help assistance with housing, paying some of the bills. One of the practical ways we approach the mothers is just making sure that she has medical care, and if she doesn't, connecting them to local pro-life clinics in the area. And making sure that when the time comes, the mother has enough clothing, diapers, any formula, or any food that they need. In case the mother already has the child or has given birth already, just providing assistance to the mother and what needs they need, either a stroller, a car seat. There's different ways that, depending on the parish's financial capacity, they're able to provide assistance. Some parishes come together as one to help mothers as well, and just connecting them to local resources in case that's one of the things that the mother needs and they don't even know about. Sometimes just on calling the Gaber Project. Usually mothers get connected with other resources in the county, and they're able to facilitate that process for them, depending on what their situation is as well. So it's a helping mothers in need ministry in all capacities, from pregnancy all the way even after birth. Some parishes take it on even a year or two after the child is born. So mm-hmm. It all depends on the parish's accompaniment process.
Yeah, the need doesn't doesn't magically stop, does it?
No, it does not. Yeah. So it all depends on the parish as well. Sometimes they even pass it on to another agency, like mm-hmm. our Knights of Columbus or St. Vincent de Paul, depending on
sure.
the need
sure.
continues to be greatly.
No, it's wonderful. It's almost hand in glove. You know, like we have Sacramento Life Center and other like-minded organizations, and just a lot of people just one-on-one counseling, if you will, with friends and neighbors to help people in crisis pregnancies, places like the St. Patrick's home up in Placerville and the Bishop Gagos home here in Sacramento. And then afterwards, you Sacramento Life Center still helps people with diapers and formula and things, and so the Gabriel Project does the same thing and many other things, obviously. And then, as you say, St. Vincent de Paul is there, the Knights of Columbus are there, and then a lot of the Sacramento Food Bank and Catholic family concerns, on and on and on. It's just and then Catholic Charities in a million different ways. It's like through all segments of life, really. The Catholic Church is there to help.
No, yes, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do, especially because during the pandemic, the USCCB provided an initiative called Mothers in Need, and I know many parishes didn't get involved or weren't able to really do something about it. So one of the things that Bishop Soto did this second year was really commit to that commitment of that initiative of Mothers in Need, and the way we could practically do that is through the Gaber Project. So it's an ongoing thing, especially with the politics going around with abortion in our state. It's a perfect time to really show that as a church we're here to support mothers and provide that option as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. No matter what happens legally, I guess is the way to put it. Our job, our responsibility doesn't change. We are here to help mothers in need and to accompany them, as Bishop Soto so perfectly puts it, you know, and to respond to their needs, as they talk about it. So often sometimes we presume a need that maybe it can be misdirected, you know, with a good heart, but misdirected. And a lot of the, sometimes people just need accompaniment. They need a friend. They need somebody to listen. They need somebody to care. And that's what we're here for, no matter where I hate to call it a political issue, but that's what it is. And it's become that because it's a life issue. But our job remains the same, no matter the state of the law. So, and Moises, greatly appreciate all you do, and we'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Okay, no, thank you, Bob.
Thanks
you for
so much.
Me.
God bless. That's Moises de Leon here in the Diocese of Sacramento, doing such great work as the Associate Director of Family and Respect Life Ministry. So just a lot happening. Moises will be a busy guy this summer. Game.
It's crazy to think that summer is already here. I mean, we've had some warm days, but I was reflecting on this the other day, how it's been, you know, the weather's been on and off, and I remember thinking, you know, I could go for some summertime. But then I remembered 110, 115, and it always brings me back to my first year living here. I was 18 years old. I had just moved here from the Bay Area, so this was like 30 years ago. So this, I'm not part of the new wave. I'm the original wave of Bay Area folks. And I remember I moved up here the day that double session football practice was going to start at Sierra College. So I had all my stuff in my car, and I moved up here. And everyone kept telling me, it's going to be hot. It's going to be hot for double sessions. I was like, okay. I've worked out in the summer before. Not a big deal. Yeah, no, I worked out in the Bay Area summer before.
No comparison.
Yeah, Rockland in the summer was never not really hot.
Yeah,
we would literally just take our shoulder pads and helmets off and go jump in the pool with the rest of our pads on and just drink Gatorade and sit in the pool for the 2 hour break between practices.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's true. It's and you know, you think about the what seems to be a growing number of homeless and. Everybody's different, of course, but and you think, well, at least you know, they're not freezing at night and they're not getting wet. But if you can find shelter, in some ways, winter's a lot easier than summer, because if you don't have air conditioning, there's no way to cool off.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
If you can find shelter and have a blanket and have a pillow and have a bed inside, even in the winter, you're okay. But so many people, I mean, I remember the big rainstorm we had in October.
Yeah.
And
that, like, one full 24 to 48 hours of just rain.
Yeah. And it was the most rain we'd ever had in a 24 hour period, like 5.5 inches of rain. And the homeless camps that were just wiped out because it was very windy as well.
Right.
And just it's like they're, you know, visually they're not pleasant to see that people are living that way, but they weren't even living that way after that. I mean, whatever comfort they'd been able to create for themselves was just gone.
I mean,
just Mother Nature just took over.
One of the things, too, you think about for the homeless population in the summertime that I think is maybe, you know, obviously not. I mean, the larger problem, obviously, is the fact that they don't have anywhere to go. So any problem you push upon on top of that is minuscule. But in the summertime, people are out later because people naturally go out when it's cooler. And in the middle of the heat, summer, people are out at night. So you go, you live in an urban area. And you're trying to, you know, get somewhere under like a, you know, under an overhang in a business, and you fall asleep. Wintertime, everyone's inside by six. You know, it's cold, it's dark, you know, the daylight savings, all that kind of stuff. No one wants to be out. Summertime, people are out till 1-2 in the morning, out being loud, hanging out outside. There's outside concerts. There's all kinds of stuff going on. It's not like you can just settle somewhere and sleep. And be have a quiet space to yourself. There's a lot less places like that in the summertime. That's so not only is it hot, you're also dealing with the public that may not be exactly excited that you're there. And you know, there could be a lot more conflict too. So, you know, there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah.
It's
thank goodness we have places like Loaves and Fishes, Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, Catholic Charities and Social Concerns. Notice a lot of these charities now, they're adding something to their name.
Mm-hmm.
Not that Catholic Charities and Social Concerns have been there for a while, and as Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services, but they usually started with one mission, and now they're adding other missions to their title.
Yeah, you start to find that, like, the thing you're doing is so tied into other things that could be going on, or like with Catholic Food Bank and Family Services. Over the years of having Blake on the show, Blake Young, I've noticed that it's evolved into something where people have no resources, have no house, they have no food, so they go there and they get food. And then when they do get on their feet, because it does happen, people do get on their feet. I know a lot of people think the misconception is when you're homeless, you're always homeless. A lot of them get back on their feet and get houses, but you know what? They still don't have a lot of money for food, and they still have to do that. So the family services is you've got these families that may have a place to live, but rent is $800 and they make $900.
Yeah.
You know, so you need a little bit of help.
Or
and
people on,
you know,
fixed incomes.
Yeah. Yeah. So they do need a little bit of help. And I always encourage everybody, if you can, to go down there and volunteer. Blake always needs the help.
They always need the volunteers.
Yeah.
And you know, the need has been so great that they've had to hire people too. I mean, you know, to run the warehouses and to you know, people that are experts in the field, you know, to drive the trucks, to do those kinds of things. It's more than just But they use tremendous number of volunteers, a tremendous number of seniors, and that got really restricted during COVID. They said, you know, if you're over a certain age, we're sorry, we can't put you into that kind of situation.
Right.
They were even using the National Guard for a while.
Yeah.
And so it is amazing though the number of Catholic organizations that provide a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
That if they were not here, there's so many things that people say, oh, the state's taking care of that. The state's taking this. It's just not true.
Or so many people don't even realize where a lot of this stuff comes from. You get like, you know, if you work for a nonprofit, you work for a charity, a lot of people don't comprehend how it works. And don't realize that, you know, my limited working for a charity or a nonprofit was when I worked at the SPCA years ago, and it's a nonprofit, and people will just go, oh, so what county do you work for? Like, what state do you work for? It's like, nope, we don't. It's private. Nonprofit. Yeah, it's private. And you work by donations. And I've gone to some of those donation dinners that they've had, you know, and things like that. So I'm assuming it's a lot like the ones that we have here. Those really are so important because, that is what they make their money, and this is how they can provide for people. And it's not make their money to make them so they can buy a new Lexus. It's make money so they can provide food for people and provide services for people. You know, when there are some things that people come to you for that are outside of what your nonprofit can do, there's a little bit of money usually set aside to put you in that direction.
Exactly.
I know at the human ones that we talk about for the charities, they do that. I know at the SPCA, they do that for certain dogs that we normally couldn't afford to treat medically. There's a fund put aside for those dogs to go and get surgeries and things like that. So it's the same thing for these funds that we talk about. They have things set aside.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where if you can help financially, that's awesome. If you can help just go down there and do some stuff, that's great too. I mean, it's a great opportunity for kids. I know you said you've taken your kids to do a lot of this stuff. Right. And I started doing that with my kids too, because they're a little bit older now. It's just one of those things where it's like you got to keep that generational idea of giving going.
Yeah, and not only are they giving, they're getting, you know, because I know one of my daughters who worked at, I've mentioned this before, the rotating winter shelter for the homeless in our hometown, and they provide a dinner and then overnight and then breakfast,
mm-hmm.
and they do it for 7 days, and then it moves to another church or synagogue in town, and during the winter, and she was a high school student. And it was just, it's amazing to see her transformation, to see that, you know, she'll see some of these homeless people around town. She knows them by name, you know.
Yeah.
She had dinner with them, and one of their jobs wasn't just to serve the dinner, but to eat with them. And we heard that from the program at St. Philomene's to feed the hungry. The
Dignity.
The same thing, dignity. You're eating with the people that you're serving. You're not just giving a free meal, but the meal is part of sharing. And she's learned. My daughter's just learned so much from that.
Yeah.
And has learned their stories. You know, sit down, have dinner with them, talk to them, find out who they are, find out what their stories are, and they're no longer just quote unquote those homeless people.
Right.
They're human beings that were made in the image and likeness of God, and she knows their name, she knows their dreams, she knows their past, and realizes that they have dreams just like everybody else.
I find it so interesting that so many people stigmatize the idea when you say it's good for you to do it as well, because people just will go, oh, so you're doing this for selfish reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, no, it's
just, you know, naturally is.
Yeah, it just, yeah, exactly. And like with your daughter, I mean, if somebody who's young, like your daughter is, to do that, she's going to never walk through life without knowing that. Like, that's never. Always going to influence her path. And that is so important, because there's so many people out there who, like you said, the homeless people become almost like, you know, well, we drive down here and you drive your way in here down Sacramento. There's a few camps that are right on the Ivy along, I believe it's X Street. And it becomes almost part of the landscape.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, there's that tree, there's the ivy, there's that guy with the tent, there's, right. you know, and it's like you don't want to do that. And it's the first step to almost dehumanizing people.
Yep,
and you don't mean to dehumanize them. You're not trying to, but it's just one of those things where you're like, oh yeah, there's that guy with the sign that I see every single day. And
I heard that sort of thing with during the real severe part of COVID when the emergency rooms and ICUs were just overwhelmed and people are on gurneys out in the hallway or out in the parking lot, where doctors and nurses and other providers saying it was hard to treat them as people. You know, I mean,
right.
Because I've got so many people in a life or death situation right now,
right.
and we can't let their loved ones in, and we can't, you know, all these things that if you just had one patient, you'd be talking to the family, and you'd be, now you're just shooing the family away and say, I'm sorry, you can't come in.
It becomes a numbers game, and when it becomes numbers,
why any of those people got into medicine.
Right, exactly. And that's the thing, too, with the homeless population. I mean, yes, there are, there's the unfortunate thing of there are some people who do not need to be on the street and will do it as a quote-unquote scam or whatever, but it's so rare that the people out there that do need help, you can find the ones who need help.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're people aren't going to these dinners and things at the churches and all that stuff because they got a house and they're scamming everybody.
No.
Yeah, that's not happening.
And you'll find these dinners are very well attended.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. I mean, nobody's going to the community meal on a Wednesday night. Because
they're trying to get a free meal.
What a choice.
Yeah. No, it's not that. And it's funny because it breaks it down to the idea that humanity has nothing to do with where you live. Humanity has to do with the fact that you're human.
Yeah.
And if you show some humanity and dignity like they talked about in our last interview weeks ago, usually you get it back. And you can connect with somebody on a normal human basis. And it's such a strange trope, though, because you think about it, as human beings in movies, in books and all this different stuff, we always have these things where there's the beginning of the story, there's a misunderstanding between these two things, and then somebody finds the humanity of Romeo and Juliet. You know, there are these two warring families, and then they find the humanity by falling in love with one another, and that book didn't end as well as hopefully everyone else's story does. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, if you just sit down and realize that other people are just like you, and you could be in their position, and they could be in your position.
That's right.
And at the end of the day, your positions don't matter when you talk to them as a human being. It's crazy to me that so many people don't realize that.
Yeah,
I know it's weird. But luckily, we have a lot of these organizations that are doing something about it.
Yeah, doing tremendous work, really. You know, and it's just. It makes you proud to be Catholic. Speaking of which, World Youth Day is coming up in Lisbon, Portugal, not this summer, next summer. And the Diocese of Sacramento is putting together a group, probably be about 30 people. And Bishop Soto will go as well, and to Lisbon in Portugal. You depart from San Francisco on July 29th. You arrive in, that's a Saturday, and then you arrive in Lisbon, and you transfer to Santiago de Compostela, and then have a dinner at the hotel, and then you've got a day of leisure the next day in Santiago, and then eventually World Youth Day starts, and there will be a papal welcome on the Thursday. There on the Wednesday, there will be a mass at St. Anthony's Church in Lisbon, built over the birthplace of St. Anthony of Padua. And then following that mass, there will be a dinner with Bishop Soto. And then a papal welcome on Thursday, a youth festival, Way of the Cross with the Pope on a Friday, a pilgrim walk, and a prayer vigil with Pope Francis on Saturday, and the closing mass, which is really the highlight It's all highlights with Pope Francis on the Sunday, returning to San Francisco and then to Sacramento on August the 7th. It's not too late to sign up. And again, this is not this summer. It's next summer, the 2023, leaving San Francisco July 29, returning to San Francisco August the 7th. For more information, go to the Diocese of Sacramento website, scd.org/WYD. That's World Youth Day, WYD 2023. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening. God bless everyone. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of America, Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Inside of me, I feel your spirit is moving around me. I hear your voice, you call me closer. I know that you're you.